The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
Sure enough, the ref was over. What's your name? And him talking to me for all match the ref. He's the captain for Trouser up and he's chatting. I'm loving the Paddy set. Paddy Andrews, red card.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
Let's turn our attention to the weekend's hurling. And undoubtedly, one of the best sports events that's going to happen this weekend is the knockout match between Wexford and Clare. And I'm delighted to say James Skell is here with us to help preview that and all the rest of the weekend's games. James, good morning to you. How are you getting on?
Morning, guys. How are you?
Good. Before we get into that, just one quick point. The minor championship last night, Cork beat Clare by 40 points. This is not something that we're used to seeing any teams, really, particularly in Munster at that age group. Sometimes a brilliant age group comes together and another county has a slightly younger or weaker, or these things happen from time to time, but 40 points is kind of worrying, isn't it?
It's huge. Like, I remember Waterford had a dream team going back in 2013 with the likes of Isaac Gleeson, and they were playing Galway in the final. And that margin of defeat was 7 or 8 points, and we thought that was a huge, huge margin. And you look at last night's result, and it just kind of screamed two counties that are on completely two different planes, two different trajectories entirely. Cork seemed to be putting all the right systems in place with an under-20 championship won. The minor victory is pretty, you know, it's pretty worrying if as a hurling fan. But if I'm a Clare fan, I'd be questioning what's going on there inside with structures from underage level up. If you watch Twitter and you watch kind of interactions amongst Clare people who would be, I suppose, have their best interests at heart at board level and also at club level, there's a lot of concerning information coming out there with regards to what structures have been put in place over the last, you know, 7 or 8 years that has now culminated in this kind of defeat. And it's demoralising for the group of players themselves. That's who I feel sorry most for, because they probably, you know, they weren't expecting such a defeat of large margins, and here they are after getting beaten by 40 points. It's a terrible state, to be honest.
Yeah, and look, not to labour this point too much, but obviously when they moved the minor grade to under 17, and I totally understand why they did that, for a lot of players on that team, this is going to be their last ever inter-county action. Yeah. And some might be lost to the system, some might be lost to the game when these type of defeats are handed out. So you'd hope that Clare get a handle on it sooner rather than later. Notwithstanding that, there's a big chance for Clare this weekend to take a big scalp and to catapult the senior team forward. What's your expectation about what's going to happen between Clare and Wexford this weekend?
The fixture is obviously going to be dominated by off-the-field issues with regards to the two managers. I think from a game perspective, I was delighted to see that Fergal Horgan has been awarded the game, because he's the right type of person to deal with everything. He's the right type of person to deal with the high-paced game. Intense game is going to be an awful lot on the line. You lose, you're out, obviously. He's the right type of person to deal with any drama that happens on the sideline. He's such an experienced referee. So, first of all, Fergal Horgan, great appointment there. The second thing then was Thurles, the pitch. It's an expansive type pitch, and I think it'll suit Clare a bit more, if I'm honest. I'm expecting a Clare victory. I think they're like a wounded animal at this stage now with regards to loss. Last week, or the week before, should I say, and they're the only team like that has a championship victory, and here they are after getting kind of the short straw. So I feel for them a bit, and I think they're going to be well up for the game. They understand an awful lot at stake. They're probably, their preparations over the last fortnight have been drowned out by obviously the managers and also with the penalty decision from a couple of weeks back. So I think as a player, they'll be itching to get going. And then Wexford, who knows, that with the battle they had with Kilkenny 2 weeks previous, there could be some tired bodies, some injuries. So I'm expecting a clear victory.
The Wexford performance against Kilkenny, I think, surprised a lot of people. The fact that they were able to get back to the level they were at in 2019 was something that we weren't sure was going to happen. And because it did happen, how much confidence will the group of players take from the fact that they were able to execute a game plan against a side that a lot of people still think are one of the genuine contenders for this All-Ireland?
Yeah, like I suppose in my pre-championship rankings, I had Kilkenny and Tip equal on 3 and 4. So if I was saying Kilkenny would be number 4 and Wexford production, it was a really good game on Wexford's behalf. I'm not trying to be dismissive or negative towards them, but they still lost the game. So they lost the game, which as a player, like, is difficult to take. Yes, you can go toe-to-toe and there's somewhat moral victories, but I think if Wexford win toe-to-toe with the likes of a Limerick, they would take an awful lot more confidence out of that type of game than going toe-to-toe with Kilkenny, who they had beaten regularly over the last number of years. So they will take some confidence in that. They execute the game plan, I would imagine, to how they wanted to. They've got their good players playing relatively well, although I think Conor McDonald, they need to get more out of him in at 14. And they have a good run into it, you know. They'll be well psyched for the game. They've played in Thurles a number of times. This group of players, I say, they've gone on relatively well. So I think it's going to be a very challenging game for Wexford if they're trying to. I'm anxious to see what kind of weather is going to be, because if it's quite hot, Thurles tends to be a real hot pitch. I know that doesn't, that might quite make sense, but when you're down on the pitch in Thurles, it's nearly hotter on the pitch than it is in the stands, obviously from a shape perspective. But if they're trying to implement a game plan that is high intense, high running, a lot of mileage, the weather may have an impact also. So that remains to be seen.
What is Clare's style at the moment? How are they different under Lohan than they would have been, say, under Davy?
Yeah, good question. It's kind of a phrase whereby you can put the dog in the fight, but you can't put the fight in the dog. And when I look at Brian Lohan, it's like, it's kind of, look at their defence. And yes, they mightn't have the most beautiful hurlers with regards to style, but they've got six guys at the back who are kind of very, very tenacious in the way they defend. They defend as a unit, they defend together. And I really like that, you know. And they kind of show traits of what Brian had himself as a player, where they're really aggressive in the tackle. They're playing for each other. So they're supporting each other. And they're doing all the donkey work from number two to nine to create chances for the guys up front. And then if there's a turnover up on the front, you can see a great level of ambition from the Clare forwards to get it back. You know, their intensity levels is massive. And I think from if you were to contrast the styles, I would say Clare's style under Fitzy was more tactical, maybe analytical. And then if you look at from Lohan's approach, it's more pride, jersey, aggression, intensity. You know, so I just wonder, can they mix the two together to get a really good team put in place? And I would think this year, obviously, they're making great strides. At the start of the year, we wouldn't have said that, obviously. But I think next year is where you're going to see great fruition of the efforts over the last couple of years. But I think you see an awful lot of similarities the way Lohan played himself. He was a pure heart-on-sleeve lad, helmet tilted back, and here's my head, you know, the rest is coming. That's kind of the way he was, head first into everything. And that's the way I see the kind of Clare boys are going at the moment.
And of course, we can't preview the game without talking about the form of Tony Kelly and the potential for him to run riot. Like, what will the plan be from a Wexford perspective? Because I think it was a bit of a surprise to see him start where he started the last day. And I don't know if that's done deliberately just to kind of throw off the pre-match plans and the markings, and then Kelly essentially plays quite free from that point forward.
Yeah.
What do Wexford do, and what did Clare do with him this weekend, do you think?
Yeah, generally when you play Wexford, they tend to put Matthew O'Hanlon on kind of their key man. So a couple of weeks ago, they put him on TJ and kind of told him to follow TJ wherever he goes. And it kind of suited because TJ's not the most pacey forward, and to be honest, neither is Matthew. But Tony Kelly is a completely different proposition entirely. Like, he's got an engine that can stay going all day and tremendous speed. So I'm not sure is Matthew the right man to take him up there. I'd be wondering, is a guy with legs like Jim O'Keefe the guy to just to stick with Tony Kelly wherever he goes? Like, Jim O'Keefe has got a great engine, great fitness. He's got a good brain, he's got experience. So maybe he'd be the guy to get on Tony. The only thing is, though, is that if he goes into the full forward line, or specifically full forward, that he should be, you know, it's a different kettle of fish playing full back as a guy like Jim O'Keefe was used to playing midfield or wing back. So they might have to do a switch over there with Liam Ryan, who's a tremendous hurler as well. But it's the freedom role. Like, Tony, like, he's such a good hurler. If you can keep him inside the opposition 65, not have him going back too far, because it has a negative impact on the team, because you don't get the same kind of, I suppose, benefits of having him back behind his own 65. You keep him inside the opposition 65, and you basically tell him, go where you want to go. Just pop up where you want to pop up, you know. And like, he'll do the damage for you. It's kind of, the good players, you kind of have to give them the license to do what they want. There are certain elements of tactics and certain types of shapes and formations that, yes, the team will have to, you know, abide by for 80% of the game. But a person of Tony Kelly's potential, let's say, to influence a game, just let him go wherever he wants, you know. And like, it seems to be a bit of the game plan too, is having Aaron Shanahan in at 14 and just lumping it in there and see how it works. And I'm a fan of that too, because it just creates a small bit of pandemonium, a bit of chaos. It's not too structured. So as a defence, you can't really defend it, because you just lamp it in, see where it goes. Shanahan is a big man. He's fantastic in the air. And like, who knows what comes off it. So having Tony Kelly with a free licence could work wonders for Clare on Sunday, Saturday.
It was 1:15 he scored in November in the last championship match between these sides. I think Matthew O'Hanlon was marking for a lot of that. So you're probably onto something, that they might go for a different person. Mm-hmm. Do they go for people, James? Like, is it worth double marking Tony Kelly?
I don't think so. I think if he's... Because if you play an expansive forward line and you double mark, and it's not like a club level where you can kind of nearly double mark a person and you can afford to leave someone off free. But if it depends. If Wexford play with a sweeper type person, then you can double mark. You know, they're obviously going to have, let's say, five forwards up the front and 2/3 midfielders with potentially seven backs if they try to adopt that game. But I think with the way the Wexford management team will look at the game, and Fitzy knows Tony Kelly well, is if you can stop Tony Kelly, if you can relatively stop him, you know, if you can stop him from play, yes, he'll score his frees and he'll get maybe a sideline, but, you know, he'll have influence there. So he's going to come away with a minimum 10 points no matter what happens. But can you stop the 10 points going to 15 points, as you said there? You know, those 5 points where he'd be influential in play or where he's assisting guys, can you stop that? And like, so Fitzy will know full well, if you stop the influence of Tony Kelly, you go an awful long way to stop him clear. So he might potentially put in seven backs and have the sweeper roaming in front of Tony to cut off his supply. As you can see what Clare do is, as I said a minute ago, they pump the ball into Aaron and obviously see what happens at the breaks. But they play an awful lot into the corners, into Tony Kelly, into space. So maybe the sweeper would stand on that section, wherever Tony Kelly is, stand that section, try to cut out the supply. And that goes a long way then for Wexford stopping Clare.
Does the ongoing feud between Brian Lohan and Davy Fitz have any impact on preparation going into a game like this?
It's a hard one to tell because, you know, like, it's very well publicised. You know, it's gone on a couple of years now. It's gone back as far as 2014 from the Fitzgibbon days, you know. And there's been a couple of games in college which really has culminated in here we are now with the two counties. I don't think so. I think it's more is made out of it from the media. And if I'm honest, right, I was speaking to a person yesterday and he was saying, geez, I think they'd be good friends from their county days. And I was kind of going, no, not really, because, like, me personally, after coming out, leaving off a county team, I probably have 5 or 6, you know, friends, like really guys you call on, you know, to go to the bog with you. Do you know what I mean? And then you have the 90% is you'd be, you know, you'd meet, you'd be civil, like, I wouldn't call it friendly, but you'd be civil. Then you'd have a few that you wouldn't be friends with. And I think Lohan and Fitzy are in the last bracket. They're not quite friends. I don't think from a relationship perspective, you know, they ever touch base outside of hurling or when, you know, when they finish. So I don't think it makes a huge difference. I think from a Clare perspective, it makes no difference. Or from a Wexford perspective, it makes no difference because it's more of a, it's pulling at the Clare heartstrings. But again, the championship is coming, lads. It's business. So whatever is going on, let's say on the sideline, leave it there on the sideline. Let the media do what they want to blow that kind of up, let's say, and fill some column inches or from screen 3 inches. But from a Clare perspective, it's business and forget about what's going on after that.
James, you hurled under Davy, right? I think at college. Did you win a Fitzgibbon?
Yes, yeah, we did. We did a fantastic team in 07, yeah.
And it sounds like over the conversations we've been having, you're quite ambivalent about him as a manager or what he brings. There must be something there. What, like, in the whole, what are the good parts about his management?
I think his management tenures, they could only really last, if I'm honest, 2 to 3 years per team. I think he's the great motivator at the very beginning. So you're like an army approach where you're all motivated together and you're heading towards the war, let's say. But there's a certain management style and a certain approach you have to have with adults, you know. And I think that approach is not quite there as time goes on into year two and certainly into year three, etc. So motivation is from the off is his very good point. Tactically, he also surrounds himself with really good people. So you've got a great management team when he comes towards you. You know, you've got a very professional base, you know, throughout, let's say, through S&C Nutrition, everything. So that's where I got my first exposure of real professionalism in sport. I was with the county team at the time, but I also with the club, with the college team. The college team was ahead of the county team in terms of preparation, personnel, you know, professionalism as a whole. So that's what I witnessed. So I think he brings that. What he also brings in is, you know, he brings a focus to certain areas that you don't quite like, you know, so off the pitch stuff as we see. It's man management, guys, for me. I know this may sound very bad, let's say, but I just don't agree with the way he manages people, manages adults, you know. It's more like a principal type student relationship whereby in modern day hurling, where you've got very, very intelligent people, you know, on both the sideline and on the pitch, let's say, it's more of a collective approach. And if you look at the way counties operate in the line of Cork and Galway and Tipperary, you get a real sense that they're all kind of heading the one approach, that they're all together, you know, ordering the same boat, you know. Whereas with teams that Fitz is involved with, it's like he's kind of the CEO and the rest of you will follow, you know. Sounds a bit harsh, but.
Well, and has that changed at all, do you think, over the years? Because the Wexford lads, like, yeah. You know, like, some
I
very.
Haven't seen it.
But there's some very impressive people on that team, like Matthew Hannon is one of the most impressive GAA people I've met. You know, Lee Chin, very impressive anytime you kind of hear and speak and talk about that. And then even some of the rest of them have gone out and set up their own businesses in recent years. So, and I don't know if that in any of that matters, right? But it seems like they're not the type who would just sit there and go, yeah, exactly. We'll do exactly what you want. It seems like they're the type who would have questions and would bring that rigorous self-analysis that you clearly had to conversations.
What if I said to you that if I was a manager and I maybe, this is going to be slightly controversial now, but I'm going to say it anyways. If I picked out the pillars of the team and say and managed them well, would the rest follow?
You would think that, yeah, that there's like a structure there. And are you asking those pillars?
No, if I asked you, if I was a manager and I picked out the main pillars of the team, players would probably carry the most influence also, and I managed them well, would the rest of the follow? The answer is categorically yes, 100%. 100% they will. You know, and that's, I look at, as I said to you, slightly controversial, but that's kind of where my head is at when it comes to that kind of type of management style.
Okay. Now you would prefer if actually everybody got equal treatment because, you know, it's not just that it's democratic, it's ultimately you don't know that the big decision in the last minute of the game isn't going to fall to somebody who you don't have a relationship with unless you've been equal in your time and effort.
Yeah, I think in a business, in a team, in a work environment, Anthony, I think if you're a member of a team, you want to feel valued and responsible. So valued in what you bring to the team and responsible in what you can deliver for the team. You know, and I think if everyone feels that in a team, so everyone across the board, that's from the guy who does the logistics to the person who does the nutrition to the guy who opened the gates in the pitch, if they feel valued and responsible, you get a much more, you get a much higher level of output and productivity. So I think if you've got a team whereby, and I keep using limerick, no, so apologies for that. And I get the overriding sense that every person in that group feels valued and responsible. And hence, you see the accolades they're getting now. Well, I know I can just use the 17 approach for Galway. I can say categorically, everyone in that area, from techs, the kit man, to the bus driver, everyone's valued and responsible, and we won the Ireland.
I do wonder how important it is that it's in Limerick's scenario and in the Galway scenario that you pointed out there, that there's a long-term relationship. Look, Davy's done remarkable things for Wexford Hurling on the basis that they were not really a credible All-Ireland contender, and now they are a credible All-Ireland contender. So I can see how the question I'm about to ask is a bit dumb. Outside managers, generally, as a rule, if you're trying to build a culture and something that's going to be sustainable in the long term, I'm not sure that that actually works in the GAA because of the parochial nature of it, because of the... Like, how can you have a long-term relationship with the kit manager and the bus driver and the people who are opening the gates in all of the training grounds? Maybe you can stay for long enough, and Davey's certainly there long enough, and he would potentially argue that actually he does know all those people now because of the relationship that he has. But I think about like football counties that are trying to make it from one tier to the next tier, and I just see the short-termism that Kildare have had for 30 years, for example. It's never been sustainable because they've never done it internally. They invested in Mick O'Dwyer. They invested in McGeaney. They're investing at the moment in Jack O'Connor. And it's like, well, maybe that changes the culture of the clubs, but it doesn't feel like it is a long-term thing. And it's interesting that you do keep going back to Limerick, and it's a Limerick man who's kind of driving that. And obviously, Kinnerk is important, but anyway, sorry, that's my ramble. What do you think of that?
Well, it's a very good point, and I do agree with you. I think that... You know, counties who engage, and Galway footballers did it as well when they brought down the fellow from Armagh, is it Kernan? What's it, Joe Kernan? Was that he? You know, they started that. We did it with Jarlath Nan in the hurlers back in 07 time. And, you know, I think if a person comes into a county team and has to be really successful, he needs to surround himself with good people. So if you're going to be an external manager, you have to have the lay of the land inside from a club perspective. So your selectors and, again, all the logistics people, all the people I've named before should be from the county. You know what I mean? If you're the head of the head of the whole pyramid, to say, you can be from an outside county, in my perspective. But I agree with you. The people, counties who are successful, their managers seem to be ingrained into the whole county, into the club scene, into the people. You know, there's a broad and global understanding of how things operate there and areas they have to focus on and influence to change, you know. And so we keep referencing Limerick, and here we are. And Jim Gavin in Dublin, the same thing. He changed the culture, putting people around him, and next thing, the ball started rolling and it became a snowball effect, you know. So I do think you're on something very interesting there.
how did your Galway setup in 2017 differ from the LIT setup in the late 2000s under Davy and under Micheál Donoghue?
Good question. So the Galway kind of set up in 17 had numerous people who had influence over the team. So you take Lucas, you know, Lucas Kirstenstein, the S&C coach, that was his area. So, and I would strongly imagine that, that Micheál or Noel or Franny, they wouldn't dive into that area. That's Lucas's area. That's his area of expertise. And who are they to say? And then you go to the physio department with Dave Hanley, and that was his area. And everyone had their area. And I think what Micheál and the guys did really well is with it, they trusted, entrusted people, let's say, in their areas to carry out the responsibilities to the best of their ability. So that, that let each person thrive. It goes back to the value versus responsibility. So Lucas would have known straight off that he has full responsibility for the S&C, and hence he's there because of his value. And you can see this kind of the size of player that was bred from Lucas. You know, guys increased kilos, 3, 4, 5, 6 kilos over the course of the year, which ultimately led to an Ireland. And I think that kind of system that Micheál put in, where there was delegation, I used the quote before, you know, the secret to good business delegation, that's what was put in place. And everyone got behind it. Players stuck to playing, you know, and then the people on the sideline did their job. So everyone came together and it was a united effort. That's the way I feel about it. From a Fitzy Fortune College, it was very much that he was the main guy. He was the main guy. So he would do team talks. He would do, you know, all the training drills. He would do the tactical analysis. He would do the psychology. He would do the logistics for setting up. He would do the physical training. You know, so there was an awful lot of things going on there. And I understand the budgets maybe would be different in college from county. So maybe he didn't have the personnel and it was different tenure as well. But to summarise, it was very, very much a broad collective approach in Galway and more of a single-minded we follow approach in LIT, if that makes sense.
It sounds like that was a pretty happy time in Galway to be involved in that panel at the stage of your career that you were at, where you were able to recognise the progress that this manager was bringing by giving everybody that responsibility.
Yeah, he convinced me to stay. I was leaving the panel at the end of the 2015 season, wasn't it? Yeah, I was leaving. I was actually going to London. I had a job lined up there. I was heading off, you know, and in January 15, and then he convinced me to stay. And then ironically, then the way things work out, 3 weeks later, 4 weeks later, my mother got sick, so I would have had to come home anyway. So just things had a way of working out, you know, and had a way of fixing themselves as such. So I owe a lot to him for keeping me here, you know, keeping me interested. And then just the whole thing took off, and it was kind of a combination of an awful lot of people's efforts over the course of a number of years. And it's something that you try to find, it's called a sweet spot. So when you're in a team that you know, you just know it's going to be successful. It's the same in LIT, to be honest, because of the group of players we had. You just know you're going to win. You know, if that, and you're going to say how, but it's very hard to explain because we prepared well, we played well, we got a bit of luck, but everyone in the team, everyone in that environment was contributing in a positive manner and they're all heading forward. There was no one pulling back, pulling the reins back. There was no one link in the chain that was going to cause a break. It was just a sweet spot. And then you go in all the teams prior to that, let's say, and after, there wasn't quite the sweet spot. You know what I mean? So where something would go wrong, some guy could get injured and you could lose him and he could be, you know, that could be detrimental to the team. Whereas in 17, everything just kind of went the way we needed it to go. You know?
Yeah. Look, there's a million different things that we could spend about 25 minutes discussing that we've touched on in this conversation. So maybe we'll do it again soon. But we didn't even preview the Munster and Leinster hurling finals.
Give us quick tips or something.
Yeah, come on, give us winners. So you think Clare are going to beat Wexford. Kilkenny, Dublin.
I think Kilkenny are going to beat Dublin. I think it's going to be a tight affair, but I can see Kilkenny winning by 6 or 7.
Okay, and then in the Munster hurling final, what's going to happen?
I think it's going to be an absolute warfare for the first chance. And I think Limerick are going to just grind it out and beat Tipperary by a couple of points.
Right. All good games. All very good games. And we get
all
to
very good games.
The Joe McDonagh Cup final, most importantly, James, who's coming out on top of that one?
I'm going back with Westmeath in that one. Okay. Noel Arkin, who's involved with the club this year, is over with them. Right. David Lennon from Galway's playing. And that's a different topic entirely, Kerry, if they win that, they twin to Leinster as opposed to their own province. So yeah. Don't start me on that one.
Tipping Westmeath is an immediate ban from OTBAM.
Yeah.
only on Thursdays. I think on Fridays you get garlanded. Good stuff, James. Yeah. Great to have you with us. Thanks a million.
Okay, folks. Good day.